On a day where Triple H officially announced the end of his in-ring career 30 years and one day removed from the exact day that he wrestled his very first match, this is your WWE SmackDown and AEW Rampage review for March 25th, 2022. I am the Solomonster. SmackDown was an unusually botchy show tonight. It was the usual waste of time that it is almost every week. But it was unusually botchy, you know, for a company that is very almost overproduced in almost everything that they do. There were a lot of weird little things and miscues and just, I don't know, up and down the card, it felt like there were different instances of incorrect announcements being made and just weird shit going on. Not a whole lot to get excited about. We are 1 week away from WrestleMania. We are 1 week away from what they are billing as the WrestleMania edition of SmackDown. They've done this before. We are getting an Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. It will again be taking place on television. Not only are we getting an Andre Battle Royal, but wait until you find out who is in the Andre Battle Royal. Oh, yes. If anybody had any doubts as to what WWE thinks of their secondary singles championships, it was made crystal clear on television tonight what they think of the Intercontinental title and the United States Championship. Not a whole lot to get excited about outside of whatever Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns are doing. And they had a story that played out throughout the entire night in Brooklyn tonight. And they're doing their damnedest to keep the two of them apart from each other, I presume, until WrestleMania, although they are promoting another Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns segment for Raw on Monday. But I would assume that they're just going to try to keep the two of them apart until they get to AT&T Stadium next weekend. Over on Rampage, we had an FTW championship match in the main event between Swerve Scott, or Swerve Strickland, I guess he is now, and Ricky Starks, which was the highlight of the show. Very good match. I enjoyed that. But also a very interesting announcement in that the Owen Hart Cup is coming up very soon in AEW, the Owen Hart Men's and Women's Cup tournaments. The women's tournament begins next Wednesday on Dynamite. They're going to have their first qualifying match. It's going to be the Bunny hopping on into Dynamite this Wednesday, taking on a mystery opponent who is the newest female signee to the AEW roster. And she, whoever she is, will be announced by Tony Khan on Wednesday. So let the speculation begin. I believe that Toni Storm is indeed on her way to AEW. I think a storm is coming. We'll see. So we'll get into all that on both shows. And of course, I am also going to talk here in a moment about Triple H. I do want to mention first, though, Super Chats are open. You already see some of them coming in on your screen. I do appreciate your support. So if you want to get those on in, go ahead and do so. Also, hit that like button if you have not already done so. That would be very nice of you to do. It helps the channel out when you do. And for those of you who may have missed it, I do want to give a quick plug here for our channel members and our family, extended family here on YouTube. I did do a WrestleMania 13 watch-along for the submission match 25 years ago this week. One of the greatest matches of all time. Between Bret the Hitman Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That is archived. If you become a new channel member, you can go back and watch it. That is up. And in addition to that, Sound Off Gamer is back in the very first installment in many years. The first episode covering WWE 2K22 is now up with more to come. We'll be doing My Rise mode starting this week. I got a new PS5 controller so I can pin people now. I couldn't pin anybody before because my controller wasn't working, my Switch controller. But now I'm using a PS5 controller, and that's not a problem anymore. So I'm very excited to get back to that. But before we get into all the events of the show tonight, we do have to talk about the top news, and I will be getting into this in a lot more detail on the podcast, obviously, coming up on Sunday. That'll be episode 749. But the big news of the day and the big news of the week, maybe the big news of the month, is Triple H breaking his silence for the first time since his cardiac event back in September. We heard from Triple H. He talked about what happened, and he also announced, as WWE did officially today on their website, that Triple H is retired as an active in-ring competitor. Without even knowing the specifics of his condition, I have been saying this on the podcast now for months. When people would ask me, do I think Triple H is going to come back? I said, no. The answer is no. Obviously, whatever happened to him was serious enough that he has disappeared off the face of the earth for months. It was pretty clear what happened to him was a lot more serious than they let on at the very beginning. And they made it sound like it was a simple genetic thing. He went in for a simple procedure. It was a lot more serious than that. Triple H almost died. And really, by all accounts, he shouldn't be here right now. So Triple H, when it comes to the heart, you really don't want to fuck around with that. It was pretty clear to me that Triple H had wrestled his last match. And it was made official today that Triple H will never wrestle again. He did an interview, sat down with Stephen A. Smith, and I thought to myself, you're going to make me listen to Stephen A. Smith. But it's part of what I do, right? I have to watch the interview and get all the details. So I had to sit through a Stephen A. Smith interview, which was bad enough. But it was very scary, and he talked about what really led to the situation, which was a bout of viral pneumonia that he was diagnosed with. This was back at the end of August, beginning of September, heading into SummerSlam. He was very busy, because I did watch, by the way, the full interview, not just the clip that they aired earlier this morning. The full 15-minute interview is up. You can find it on YouTube, but it's up on ESPN+. So I watched the entire interview, and he said, he was running around like a madman and running himself ragged, and there were tryouts and all these things going on, heading into and coming out of SummerSlam. And he was feeling sick, and he thought it was COVID. He said he had COVID before. He got his two shots and everything. He had already had COVID, and it felt to him like maybe he was getting it again. And he was tested. He said it came back negative. And then came, the diagnosis of the viral pneumonia. It was getting worse, and he was coughing up blood, and Stephanie noticed and urged him to go to the hospital and get it checked out, which he did. And that's when he found out how serious the situation was, because the test that he took showed that his ejection fraction, which is a measurement of it measures the percentage of blood that is, leaving your heart with each heartbeat. It's a pretty important, diagnostic measure. And in a normal person, in a healthy person, somewhere in the 55 to 60 range would be good. That's where you would want to be. In his case, it was 30 when he got that news. So his doctor was texting him and saying, look, pack a bag, drop everything else you're doing, get in the car, and come to the ER right away. And that's what he did. And by the time he got to the ER, his ejection fraction had gone down even more. It was down to 22. The next morning, they were prepping him for a procedure. It dropped as low as 12. And the way he described that is, that's like being at the one-yard line, basically, of death. There's a lot of people who have a measurement of 12 who aren't here anymore. And as he talked about in the interview, had he waited much longer, he would not be here, because basically, and again, I'll get into all the details on Sunday, but as he described it, I think it was one of these ventricles of the heart. There was basically a 99% blockage. And he used the term widowmaker. You've heard of widowmaker heart attacks. They hit you from out of nowhere. It's just instant death. And he was one step away from a widowmaker. That's how close this man was to death. This goes beyond a wrestling career or any of that stuff. This is life and death shit. This is a guy who has a wife. He's got three kids, age 15, 13, and 11. He's got three girls. And he's not an old man. I mean, how old is Triple H? 50, right? He's in the early 50s. He's not that old. And him being here right now is a miracle. I mean, he's a very lucky man to be walking and breathing and still among the living at this moment. So it was a lot more serious, as I think a lot of us suspected, than WWE let on, or that he let on. And again, it's his business if he wanted to share that information or not. And Stephen A. even asked him, why the silence? Why all this time of not saying anything and not clarifying what your condition is? And he basically just said he didn't want to say the wrong thing, and if he misunderstood what was going on. And he said, I mean, his explanation honestly didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And part of me wonders, you know, this being a publicly traded company and him being an executive pretty high up in this company, if maybe that didn't have something to do with it, if they felt like we can't be completely forthright about how serious this guy was, you know, to death or is, how serious his condition is, it could have some kind of negative effect on the company or on the stock. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that played into his thinking, because his explanation didn't really make a whole lot of sense. But he did, you know, bring that up. And as far as his future, he made it very clear. He will never wrestle again. He has a defibrillator in his chest, which I also think Scott Hall had. I know Scott Hall had a pacemaker, but I think he also had a defibrillator. He goes, he's got one in his chest, and he kind of joked. He goes, it wouldn't be a good idea if, you know, something happened and they needed to use it for him to have to be zapped on live TV. So that should shut the door on any talk of any physicality of any kind. I cannot envision a scenario where Triple H gets cleared to do anything physical. Maybe one day, years from now, he can throw a punch. That's about it. You know, when you have something like that implanted in your chest, you know, one wrong movement, you take a bump, you can fuck up the wiring, and all of a sudden that thing doesn't work. And then if you get hit with something, if you get hit by, you know, a heart attack or an arrhythmia or whatever the case may be, the whole point of having that is that they can shock you, you know, back to life. If that thing isn't working because you took a fucking flat back bump, then you're a fucking goner if something happens. And so, honestly, you know, his wrestling career is the least important thing about all this. Triple H was basically done anyway. Triple H has been done for a while. And we could talk about his career, and we could talk about all the great matches that he's had. What are your favorite matches? What do you think his best matches are? But the reality is, Triple H has not had very many memorable matches now in many years. I had lost my desire to see the annual obligatory Triple H WrestleMania match a long time ago. And his last truly great match, I think, was the match of WrestleMania 34 in 2018 when Ronda Rousey made her debut. It was Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle against Triple H and Stephanie. That was the match of the night at WrestleMania. That was a great match. And kudos to all four of them for playing their part and playing their role. And Ronda, too, you know, for that being her first match. So Triple H's best days in the ring were long behind him anyway. And the last thing I want to see the guy do is get back in the ring and risk killing himself and dying in the ring. There's no reason for it. So hopefully, you know, he's at peace with it. I've been at peace with it because, like I said, I didn't have any interest in seeing him back in the ring anyway. I'm just happy the guy is alive and he seems to be doing pretty well. Although, you know, he did make a comment, I guess, to Stephen A. that he's at 50% of what he was. Now, he didn't really, Stephen A., when he made that comment earlier today, didn't really specify what he meant by that. Did he mean 50% was his ejection fraction, or was 50% just kind of a generic, oh, I'm feeling about half of what I used to be? I'm not sure exactly what he meant by that, but the fact is we now know exactly how serious the situation was. Triple H will never wrestle again. He is still working for WWE. He's not going to AEW. I know all the memes. Everybody was making fun for months. Triple H, you know, Paul Levesque is all elite. No, he's not. He's still working for the company. He hopes to continue to have a role in terms of recruitment, and they do these camps every few months and bringing in new talent. He mentioned Gable Steveson and people like that. But the day-to-day stuff that he was doing with NXT, it sounds like those days are done. And really, I think you knew it was done the minute they blew up NXT and they really completely eviscerated his vision and blueprint for what NXT used to be. It doesn't belong to him anymore. I think if he walked back into that performance center and took that chair and put the headset back on, it would be completely foreign to him. Because what he would be walking back into is a completely different product from the one that he left behind. So he will always have some kind of a role in that company behind the scenes, but as far as what he was doing before, those days are over. But we should just be happy that he is still living and breathing, because we came very close to having another early wrestling death on our hands. So anyway, I'll have more on Triple H on Sunday. A lot more to say about this, his condition, his career. The guy's not dead. I'm not going to eulogize him, but I got a lot of thoughts on my mind and a lot of things to say about Triple H and his legacy and all that. So Again, I'll save that for 7:49 on Sunday. But let's get into SmackDown here, because they were in Brooklyn tonight. They weren't too far from where I am now. You know what's sad? I didn't even realize they were in Brooklyn. You know, usually in the past, you know when WWE is coming to town. And completely slipped my mind that they were even in town tonight for this show. Shout out to Samoan Fan for the super chat. He's blocking this guy's view. Look at this. Guy behind him can't see. But they were in Brooklyn. They recapped last week's attempted murder that we witnessed on television with Brock Lesnar driving a forklift through the Bloodline's SUV. This week, Cowboy Brock was casually standing up against the wall with his WWE title over his shoulder, waiting outside Roman Reigns' locker room, waiting for him to show up. Kayla Braxton showed up, and she asked Brock if he had thought about the consequences of his actions last week, and he said he had. He said, in fact, he paid some fines for what he did, and he bought a new SUV for Roman, and his favorite color, too, blood red. He was also told that he couldn't touch Roman unless he was physically provoked. And so he said he was going to hang out of Roman's locker room until it was time for a good provoking. And he walked inside the locker room. The camera followed him in. Very nice locker room. Nice blue lighting. I wanted to set the mood here. You know, you walk in on SmackDown into one of these dressing rooms. You got like the blue mood lighting. We got some blue mood lighting here behind me for the SmackDown review. So you gotta set the right mood for these reviews. You got some blue lighting right here. I'm trying to recreate the scene, although this room is not quite as nice as Roman's locker room at the Barclays Center tonight, I will say. And Roman said, or Brock was looking around. He goes, pretty nice. He goes, not as nice as mine, but he goes, it's pretty nice. And he ate some food. He sat down on the couch and he violently put his feet up on the table and broke the table. I always enjoy a good Brock smash. That will never get old to me. Whether it's a forklift, whether he's just using his bare hands or his legs or whatever. Brock Lesnar smashing stuff is always fun. That will always be over with me. We had Shinsuke Nakamura with Rick Boogs in his corner one-on-one against one half of the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos. Of course, I'm talking about Jimmy Uso. Before the bell, Usos tried to jump Nakamura and Boogs, but they fought them off. I thought these two, they had a good match. Obviously, they're saving their best stuff for WrestleMania. Nakamura set up for the Kinshasa, but Jay attacked Boogs at ringside. And that briefly distracted Nakamura. Jimmy took advantage, hit a super kick for a two count. Outside the ring, Jay grabbed Boogs' guitar. Boogs grabbed it away from him and then shoved him face first into the ring post. Jimmy was distracted this time. And that allowed Nakamura to hit the Kinshasa for the win. So the babyfaces get the much-needed win here. They needed this win heading into their title match at WrestleMania. They cut back to Roman's locker room. And Brock Lesnar was still hanging around. He was still on the couch. He was enjoying some grapes. Probably not the only one who thought of Matt Hardy when I saw that bowl of grapes sitting next to him. He was drinking some champagne, some fine champagne. But apparently it wasn't so fine. He spit it out. And he took the champagne bottle and chucked it across the room, smashed it against the wall. They also announced on the show tonight that Shad Gaspard will be the recipient of the annual Warrior Award this year at the WWE Hall of Fame. That is next Friday. He is a most deserving recipient. That man was the very definition of hero. And so if anybody deserved the Warrior Award, it's certainly a Shad Gaspard. So I think it's very nice and very cool of them to acknowledge him in that way. You know, when they put the graphic up on screen, it got a nice reaction in the building in Brooklyn. Yeah, everybody cheered. And there literally is nothing to complain about or say negative about this announcement. Now, that didn't stop some people on social media today from saying, oh, well, you know, they should do this and they should rename. Why didn't they rename it for him? And, you know, how come they didn't do it last year? Always going to be people who find something to bitch about. There is nothing to complain about with this announcement of all the things to go after WWE on. This is not one of them. It's very nice of them to acknowledge him. And very sad what happened. It reminded me of that whole story all over again. Very, very sad. But the man died a hero. So backstage, Kayla Braxton interviewed Drew McIntyre. And she asked him about his match with Happy Corbin at WrestleMania. And Drew said the match was personal because Corbin tried to end his career. And so he's going to get back at him at WrestleMania. He said he relished the opportunity to make his life miserable since he came back. And Drew said that he could take him out at any time, but he wants to savor it on the grandest stage of them all. So we then got a video package that recapped the I guess you would say the evolution or the transition of bum-ass Baron Corbin to Happy Corbin that we have today. Shout out to Dope Rebel for becoming a sound-off superstar. I know Dope Rebel is going to be watching that WrestleMania watch-along tomorrow. Boy, he's got his Saturday all worked out. He's going to bring it up on Peacock. He's going to sync it up. He's going to enjoy himself some Bret Hart against Steve Austin, a fine way to spend the weekend. So Dope Rebel, thank you for becoming a channel member. You got to deal with me now, he said. That's right. We got to deal with him now. But I like this because they had a video and Baron Corbin did the narration for it. And we got to see bum-ass Baron Corbin when he was down on his luck. He was letting his hair grow back in. He hadn't shaved in weeks. He had the dirty white shirt with the food stains, you know, the sauce stains on it. And it just reminded me of how much I enjoyed broke-ass Baron Corbin. It was the most entertaining I've ever found him in all the years that he's been in WWE. That was his best gimmick. And look, I could understand him or his significant other as well not wanting this to be a long-term thing, where this guy has to go walking around in his everyday life, not shaving, letting his hair grow back in the fucking horseshoe shape, walking around like a slob. I can understand him not wanting this to be a long-term gimmick. But still, I think it ended way too soon. It was way too premature for it to be over. And I think it needs to make a return. I think disheveled, broke, down on his luck, Baron Corbin needs to come back. He needs to go back to Vegas. He needs to gamble at all. He needs to lose. Go back to doing that all over again. When the video was over, though, they went backstage to Corbin and Madcap Moss. They were standing there live, and Corbin was watching this video of his lowest of lows and how he came back to the top of the mountain. He was all excited, said his life was an inspiration, and it could be a movie trilogy. They can make a movie trilogy about it, he said. He said he could win an Oscar, and Madcap Moss laughed and he joked that they could call it Bald Fellas. Corbin did not find this funny. Actually, I don't think anybody found this funny, but Corbin did not find this funny and he walked off. That is now the second time that Madcap Moss has told a bad joke that Baron Corbin did not find funny. So that right there is what you call foreshadowing. We were supposed to have a rematch between Kofi Kingston and Ridge Holland. That was the match that was advertised, as is the case many times with WWE. They will advertise a match, and we end up not getting that match, or the match gets changed to some kind of multi-man match or a tag team match. So that match did not take place because Kofi Kingston came out and said that when WWE said Holland would have a match with the New Day, it didn't mean that he was going to be the member of New Day. He says it would be this man. And out came King Xavier Woods for the first time. We haven't seen him since January. He was nursing an injury, so this was his big return. Got a great reaction from the crowd. And, you know, this would have made for a great surprise, which I think was the idea. Unfortunately, there was one little thing. The ring announcer, who I believe was Samantha Irvin, ruined the surprise when Kofi Kingston came out to the ring by announcing, when he came out, that he was being accompanied by Xavier Woods. Oops. So much for that. For some reason, when the match started, by the way, that was the first of several miscues on this show. When the match started, Michael Cole, when Woods went after Holland, Michael Cole acted shocked. He said, well, I guess Xavier Woods is going to be wrestling Ridge Holland. Yeah, no shit. Did you not hear what Kofi Kingston just said? He literally just cut a promo talking about the fact that he was not going to be the member of New Day going into this match. Pat McAfee had to correct him and say, well, Kofi did say it was going to be Woods going after him. So Michael Cole was seemingly out to lunch during Kofi Kingston's promo here before this match. So the match lasted less than a minute. Woods won with a roll-up. Absolutely nothing to this. This was more of an angle than a match. And I'm guessing that we end... Now, they haven't announced anything for WrestleMania. We are a week away from WrestleMania. Two nights of WrestleMania, right? The most stupendous WrestleMania of all time. The greatest main event of all... Everything's the greatest with this company. Everything is the greatest. At WrestleMania in Dallas next week, it's going to be the greatest WrestleMania. We're going to have the greatest crowd. We're going to have the greatest catering in the back. There'll be plenty of wrestlers enjoying that. The greatest catering. Everything is going to be great. Everything is the best. Yet, the card is still incomplete. There are still matches that have not yet been announced for this show. I would assume we're going to end up getting Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods against Sheamus and Ridge Holland, probably with Butch in their corner. That would be my guess. I believe they were going to do a six-man tag. And then Big E, of course, got taken out. So now it'll probably end up being a regular tag team match. You know, speaking of Sheamus and Holland and Dunn, you know, you look at them together, and they make a great group. But, you know, Pete Dunn was on a podcast, I think Mark Andrews' podcast this week, talking about the name change. And it's not like he defended it either. He did briefly address it. And he didn't exactly defend it. So there is no defense. That's why. There is no defense of it. It makes no sense. It's completely unnecessary. And if you were going to give him a new name, that name in particular was completely unnecessary. So I'm hoping that in spite of the name, these three together can go on to find some success. Because as like a European faction, I think this could work. But that fucking name. Good Lord. So Michael Cole all of a sudden said that they had breaking news. We had breaking news in the form of a video message that had been sent in by Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns. And we cut to a limousine somewhere, and sitting in the back is Paul Heyman holding the Universal Championship, clutching it in his hands. And he introduced the Universal Champion sitting in the seat right next to him. And the camera pans over and we see Roman Reigns sitting next to Paul Heyman. They talked about all the things they did in the city today, including a stop at Del Frisco's Steakhouse. I'm a Smith and Walensky's guy myself, even though I haven't been in the city. I haven't been in Manhattan in 2 years, but Smith and Walensky's has some great steak. Been a while since I've been there. I know Heyman, I think Heyman is quite partial to Del Frisco's, but he was raving about the food. He said they made a quick stop in Madison Square Garden. That's where he left Brock Lesnar a bloody mess a few weeks ago. He said Brock had until he and the wise man got to the building to vacate his locker room. And if he did not, then he would open his skull up and leave him a bloody mess in Brooklyn this time. He would do to him what he did in Madison Square Garden. We were told that Ronda Rousey was, quote, on the Rampage tonight, looking for Charlotte Flair. That was a lie. Ronda Rousey was on SmackDown, not Rampage. And if she was on Rampage, she sure didn't look like it when she walked out here because she had a big smile on her face. She had a big smile. She's taking Vince McMahon's advice. You gotta smile more, pal. Everybody's gotta smile. Everybody's gotta look happy to be there. But yet they're trying to portray this like this woman is on the warpath after Charlotte Flair beat her up and powerbombed her last week through a table. Didn't look like it when she came out to the ring. So there's Ronda Rousey standing in the ring, not looking like somebody who's been on a rampage. Ronda, you know, she's no buys. There's an expression for you. Ronda is no buys as a babyface, having to remember and recite all of this dialogue for her, and she's out there, and she, you know, she's so wooden in her delivery. It's painful. It's painful to watch. I've seen wet, soggy pieces of cardboard that are more entertaining than babyface Ronda Rousey standing out there trying to cut a promo. She said Charlotte was going to give her the title. When I tap her out of WrestleMania, Charlotte is going to give me the championship. And she said, you can call me your new Women's SmackDown champion. And then she corrected herself because she realized she fucked up. She corrected herself and said, SmackDown Women's Champion. And then she just went off. Clearly, she went off script. And she says, why do we even have the word women's in the title? She goes, I'm going to be the SmackDown champion, is what she said. Rousey demanded that Flair come to the ring. And instead, Charlotte appeared up on the Titantron, sitting in a chair somewhere, obviously in the back. But she was up on the Titantron and she said, did you really think that she was going to show up in that low rent city? Got a lot of booze. Charlotte Flair has clearly never lived in New York, if she's going to refer to this as a low-rent city. There's no such thing as low-rent in this city. You'll pay at least $2,000 for a shitty one-bedroom. There ain't nothing low-rent about New York City. Clearly, she's not from these parts. So Rhonda told a story, said that when she was 14 years old, she broke her first arm, and she liked it. Well, Katy Perry kissed a girl. Ronda Rousey broke an arm. Didn't say if it was her own arm or somebody else. Obviously, she was talking about somebody else's arm. Could have been her own. Maybe she likes pain. But she said that eventually she lost count, and she stopped counting the number of arms that she broke. And she said, if Charlotte should somehow find a way to beat her at WrestleMania, it'll be the biggest win of Charlotte Flair's career. But when she beats Charlotte at WrestleMania, she will simply be another part of the count. And she threw the microphone down, and that was the entire segment. I said it last week when I talked about this show and the angle they did at the very end. I'll say it again here. This does not feel like a WrestleMania main event. This may or may not be closing out the show next Saturday. There's been talk that maybe the Stone Cold segment with Kevin Owens will, even though this is technically supposed to be the main event. Ronda Rousey won the Royal Rumble. She should be going to the main event of WrestleMania. I would not mind at all if they put Stone Cold and Kevin Owens in the main event, because that at least feels like a major, major attraction. This does not. This does not. And these promos from Ronda Rousey are not doing any favors for this feud. This thing is just, to me, speaking for myself, it feels cold as a block of ice. This does not feel like a WrestleMania main event. And next week is WrestleMania. They got one more SmackDown to go. I can't imagine they're going to do anything any different next week. We have seen all that we're going to see from these two going into the pay-per-view. Very underwhelming. We had the Intercontinental Champion, Ricochet, one-on-one against Humberto Carrillo. Or at least, that's who Samantha Irvin announced as his opponent. Yet another very weird moment here on this show. She announced Humberto as the opponent for Ricochet. When they came back from the commercial break, Michael Cole said that it was actually Angel Garza in the match. So they goofed on the match, because we ended up getting both matches. Clearly, they goofed. I don't know if it was Samantha Irvin, or she was just doing what she was told, and somebody in the back fucked up, but somebody goofed, and they got the match order wrong. So, another fuck-up on this show. Even before we get into the match, when Los Lotharios come out, they do the Kiss Cam segment. And they usually find a woman in the front row, right by the aisleway, and they get in, and then she's got Humberto on one side and Angel on the other, kissing her on the cheek. Right? They've been doing this gimmick now for a while. Los Lotharios come down. They're looking for someone, and they can't find the woman. They're looking for somebody to kiss. They can't find her. They look very confused, and they go to just basically go, all right, well, let's just get into the ring. All of a sudden, you see this woman kind of waving in the background, and she rushes up to the front row, and they finally see her. You know, Humberto looks, and they see her. Obviously, this woman, missed her cue. There was some kind of miscommunication here, and they almost completely missed her. But then finally, she rushed up to the front and they gave her the kiss. Yet another awkward, weird moment on this show. There was something in the water in Brooklyn tonight with this show. I don't know. A lot of little things that just came off very weird here on this television show. This didn't last long before Angel rolled up Ricochet for the win off the distraction from Humberto. Ricochet grabbed the mic after the match and said, "This is not ending like this." He was doing his best Lex Luger impression from his match with Tatanka, the King of the Ring in 93. "We're not ending it like this." He wanted 5 more minutes. That's basically what Ricochet wanted here. He wanted the other guy. He says to Humberto, "Come down to the ring and take the L like your cousin was about to." And so we did, in fact, end up getting Ricochet against Humberto Carrillo. We just got it in the wrong order. This one went a little bit longer, at least. This went about 7 minutes. Ricochet climbed to the top rope. Angel pulled Humberto down out of the ring. And Ricochet ended up walking part of the ropes. He hit this huge dive. Out, this diving crossbody, high in the air. Down onto Angel, who pushed Humberto out of the way. At that point, Angel, that's right. Tundar, that's right. Tundar the Argonian in the chat makes a great point. This was a very Botchamania. 1 week before WrestleMania, this was a very Botchamania edition of SmackDown. Matthew was going to have a friggin' ball pulling clips from this show. So after Angel got taken out by the crossbody, he rolled under the ring. You could clearly see him roll underneath the ring. Ricochet then hit a tornado DDT. He kicked off the table, off the announce table, and gave Humberto a DDT on the floor, rolled him back inside. As he was attempting to climb back into the ring, Angel came out from under the ring and he grabbed Ricochet's legs, or his leg, and prevented him from getting back into the ring before the 10 count. So Ricochet got counted out and Humberto was declared the winner. So to recap, they had the Intercontinental Champion. We're now a week out from WrestleMania. The Intercontinental Championship is not scheduled to be defended at this point of WrestleMania. Okay, he has no match at WrestleMania. They had the Intercontinental Champion lose 2 matches back-to-back on the same show. Now, granted, it was by chicanery by the heels, but still, they had the champion lose twice back-to-back. Champs were chumps. On the show tonight, thy name is Ricochet. So, they announced that there is going to be a triple threat match, which seemed pretty obvious coming out of this segment, but it will not be at WrestleMania. No. It's going to be on the WrestleMania edition of SmackDown. Remember last year we had WrestleMania Backlash? All you got to do is take the WrestleMania name and just slap it onto something. You could have WrestleMania Raw on Monday. That leads into WrestleMania SmackDown on Friday. I mean, shit, you could have WrestleMania Main Event on Peacock and put Veer in the main event. That's where he's been wrestling for the last few months. And technically, Veer could be in the main event of WrestleMania. You could start having WrestleMania live events. Right? WWE comes to the Midwest. WWE comes to these little small buildings in some of these towns. And you can slap the WrestleMania name on it. Maybe you'll sell an extra 100 tickets. So they're putting the triple threat match with Ricochet, Humberto, and Angel on SmackDown next Friday. And that is when we are going to get the Intercontinental Championship being defended. They continue to treat the IC title basically like a dirty diaper. Every now and then, you know, they change it. And then it just fills right back up with shit. Rinse, repeat. The cycle just continues itself. But fear not. Because WWE is fair, if nothing else, right? It's not enough that the Intercontinental title is treated like garbage. They do have another championship over on the other show. It's called the United States Championship. Finn Balor happens to be the champion right now. And so for those of you who may have been wondering, what are they going to do with Balor at WrestleMania? It seemed like they were setting up for a rematch for the title with him and Damian Priest. Oh, no. No, that's not the plan at all for WrestleMania, because we got another piece of news on this show. Another match that is being held off WrestleMania this year. They've done this before. is the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. They are not doing a women's battle royal because they don't have enough fucking women, right? They had that problem with the Royal Rumble, if you remember. That's why we had Impact Knockouts champion Mickey James in the Royal Rumble this year. So we were never going to get a battle royal with the women at WrestleMania because they're not going to go through this again. Mickey James is sitting at home thinking, oh, I might get a WrestleMania payday this year. No, you're not. They're not doing a women's battle royal. The men's battle royal is going to happen on SmackDown next week, with the winner winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy. The annual Jobber Battle Royal. And guess who made the cut this year for the annual Jobber Battle Royal? Why, it's the United States champion Finn Balor. And the former United States champion, Damian Priest. They will not have a match at WrestleMania. They are being lumped into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And would you take a look? I want you to take a look at this incredible roster on your screen right now. For the Battle Royal. Look at this lineup here. We have Bobby Roode. And I enjoyed seeing Bobby Roode, by the way, on NXT this week, because it felt like old NXT champion Bobby Roode back for one night. But we've got Bobby Roode, Jinder Mahal, Shanky, Apollo Crews, Commander Aziz, Madcap Moss, Mansoor, who they dust off once every few months, R-Truth, the Viking Raiders, Shelton Benjamin, Cedric Alexander, Akira Tozawa, Drew Gulak, and Reggie. This is the lineup for the Battle Royal, where they have also included the United States champion Finn Balor. Says a lot about the Intercontinental and U.S. titles that there is no room for either one on the WrestleMania card, even with the show spread out over two nights. That's what really gets me the most. This fucking show has expanded. It is so bulbous. It is so bloated that they have expanded it to two nights. It's an entire weekend. At least 3 hours a night, maybe four. And they have no room for either one of their secondary titles. It's amazing. Well, how could there be room for the championships? I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? You got to make room for Pat McAfee and Logan Paul and Johnny Knoxville. And, you know, we got to have our priorities straight here. It's a joke. Speaking of Pat McAfee, he was at ringside. All of a sudden, here comes Austin Theory out of nowhere. I don't know where he came from. Nobody saw him. He shows up, and yet again, he smacks McAfee's headset right off his head. And then he's baiting him to follow him as he's running to the back. And so McAfee takes the bait. And McAfee starts giving chase to him to the back. And we see McAfee goes all the way to Vince McMahon's dressing room where the door slams behind Theory. Theory ran into Mr. McMahon's office and shut the door behind him. I don't recall McAfee trying to open the door using the doorknob. I know he banged on it a couple of times. I don't think he actually tried to open the door. Maybe had he tried to open the door, it would have opened. I don't know what he was so afraid of. But he stopped and he got really angry, and that was the end of the segment. We had a fatal four-way with one member from each of the four teams in the women's tag team title match at WrestleMania represented. Sasha Banks, Rhea Ripley, Shayna Baszler, and Zelina Vega. Banks and Ripley went back and forth until Zelina pulled Banks out of the ring. A big brawl broke out. This is in the first, like, 30 seconds. A big brawl breaks out with everybody, including the partners who are out there. They go to a break. When we come back, we find out that all the partners have been ejected from ringside. So Carmella is gone, Liv Morgan is gone, Natalya is gone, and Naomi. They've all been sent to the back. Zelina briefly in control. She missed the double knees in the corner. Banks locked on the bank statement, but Shayna stopped her from tapping out. Baszler tried to break Zelina's arm, but Banks locked them both in the bank statement instead. Ripley broke up the submission with a running dropkick. Rhea went for the riptide on Shayna, but she escaped. Sasha then hit a backstabber on Baszler and on Ripley. Very interesting if you look back at the women's match from last week. And I think this is a recurring pattern with a lot of Sasha Banks matches. Matches that she just so happens to be part of. If you look at the quarter-hour breakdowns of the ratings tend to go up when Sasha Banks is on TV. When Sasha Banks was in NXT that time, didn't she have the match against Io Shirai, I think it was? I remember that being a story at the time where the ratings went up. I'm telling you, Sasha equals ratings. And for how they position her on this show, she is miscast. Surprising to me that they don't have more for her to do. Baszler and Zelina ended up on the floor brawling, and Rhea hit a cannonball off the apron. She wiped out Baszler, who looked like she smacked her head on the floor. So hopefully she's not concussed, because that looked like a rough bump to take. And if she is, then they're going to have to figure something out before WrestleMania. But she hit pretty hard on the floor. Zelina hit a hurricanrana off the apron onto Ripley and then tried getting back in the ring, but Sasha recovered and locked on the bank statement for the win. So this was good. You know, for the time it lasted, this was good. I thought the women's stuff last week was really good. And I actually, even though I could care less about the women's tag team titles, I could not possibly care any less about the women's tag team paperweights. The match itself, though, has the potential to, I think, surprise people and be pretty good, given some of the talent who's in there. Namely, Sasha Banks, Naomi, Rhea Ripley. They've got some talent in the match. So we'll see what they pull off. I can't imagine that someone like Sasha Banks is going to go to WrestleMania and is not going to have something special planned and is not going to want to go out there and try to steal the show. This match is not going to steal the show. But I think, though, you'll have some women in this match that are motivated enough to go out there and make that thing more than watchable. But, the women's tag titles, another example of titles on this show that just are not treated with any sort of real relevance. And so it's hard, when you have a championship match and all of a sudden they don't feel special anymore because they don't really do anything with them. That's the problem. Vince Russo many years ago made a comment that really upset a lot of people. And it upset Cornette. Look, him breathing upsets Jim Cornette. But, it upset a lot of people when he had said that, the title, I think he was talking about the world title, on the show, it's just a prop. I think it was the way that he said it, very flippantly, and, clearly his attitude about it is, who gives a shit? It's just a prop on a television show, because he's a writer, and that's it. To him, it's just a prop on a television show. He wasn't totally wrong in that. I wouldn't be so flippant about it. I would want to make that world championship be the most important thing in the world. But it is a prop on a television show. And so it is up to the writers of that show, the bookers in this case, the people putting the shows together, to take that prop and make it the most important thing on the show. Yes, a title is really it's just a device to use as part of your television show. But it's up to you to make them feel special. You have the power to make me think that that belt is fucking important. And right now, this company, outside of the titles that Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns are holding, does a piss-poor job of making those championships, those props, feel special in any way. It's almost like, why even bother having them? It's almost like they're bothered they even have to throw them out there. In the back, an SUV pulled into the parking lot. Paul Heyman stepped out, opened the door for Roman Reigns. They have arrived. And Heyman was worried. Reigns told him, don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. And then the show peaked with the final segment. This was the only thing on the entire show really worth a damn. Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman come down to the ring. And they get a very strong reaction here in Brooklyn. They got loud boos, loud cheers, but very loud for Roman Reigns. He asked Paul Heyman if Brock was still in his locker room, and Heyman acted terrified. He didn't know. All of a sudden, video pops up on the screen of Roman's locker room. It's in shambles, but there's no Brock Lesnar. And the crowd chanted Suplex City, and Roman shouted at them, this isn't Suplex City. I said, this is the Island of Relevancy. Back up on the screen, they cut to a shot of Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar just standing there with his bare hands is scary enough. Last week, we had Brock Lesnar driving a forklift, walking around with a car door. This week, it was Brock Lesnar with a pickaxe. There are few sights scarier than Brock Lesnar walking around with a pickaxe. You can do an entire horror movie franchise based around cowboy Brock Lesnar with his cowboy hat and the ponytail sticking out the back carrying a pickaxe around. In fact, you could probably get 3 or 4 sequels out of that movie. They got 11 or 12 of them with Friday the 13th. There's no reason that you can't have Cowboy Brock turn that into a franchise. I'm just saying, WWE Films, come on. They can do it. So there's Brock Lesnar. He's standing there with a fucking pickaxe like he's in fucking Fortnite. And he takes the pickaxe, he's busting out the windows of the SUV, and he's smashing the hood, and Roman is no-selling this. He's no-selling it. Says, I own like four of them. I don't care. So Brock chucks the pickaxe behind him, and he starts to make his way into the arena. And they play Brock's music, and again, Roman is in the ring, facing the aisleway, waiting for Brock to come out. Brock, instead, though, comes through the crowd. Roman doesn't know this. Lesnar comes through the crowd. He jumps up on the announce desk. Because, again, he's technically not allowed to have physical contact unless provoked. So instead of going after Roman, he stands up on the announce desk. Roman then turns around and sees him. And we get this human wall of security geeks who come out and stand between where Brock is on the announce desk and the ring. They're gonna protect Roman Reigns from Brock Lesnar. So Brock jumps down, he grabs a steel chair, and gets back up on the announce desk. And as Brock is figuring out what he's going to do here, he jumps off the announce desk and does like a flying kick on his way down. And he kicked one of the security goofs, and he started beating the hell out of all of them with this chair, one right after the other. The Usos showed up, they grabbed Roman, and they said, let's get the hell out of here, so they bailed out of the ring. And Roman then, once he was in the back in the gorilla position, the camera picked him up, he looked into the camera, and he told Brock Lesnar that at WrestleMania, he is going to acknowledge him as the undisputed WWE Universal Champion, and Brock stood on the table smiling to close out the show. The only thing worth giving a damn about on SmackDown is Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns. That's it. For months and months and months, it was the Roman Reigns show. It was all about the bloodline. There really wasn't a whole lot else going on this show to get excited about. Now it's Brock and Roman. When they get to WrestleMania, this feud is over. Okay, we've seen enough of Brock and Roman. Once WrestleMania is over, it's time to move on. But the problem is, what the hell do they do on SmackDown when this feud is over? All the really good things on SmackDown now, most weeks, involve Roman and Brock in some kind of a segment or a stare down or a segment in the back or a promo or something. When WrestleMania is over, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. Now, I don't know who that's going to be. I'm going to wait until Thursday when I go live and I'll do a prediction stream and we'll talk about who I think is going to win and who I think is going to lose at WrestleMania. Well, what are they actually going to do here? I'm not sure, but I will say that really the fate of SmackDown, I think a lot of it depends on who comes out of this match as the champion. And if it's Roman Reigns, then they have Drew McIntyre on the show and they can begin to build him up because they're not going to go right into Roman and Drew, I don't think. Drew McIntyre he's the de facto number one babyface on the show once Brock Lesnar is gone. Jeff Hardy was number two. They lost him. Ricochet is the number two babyface on SmackDown. Now let that sink in for a second. Let that sink in. Internally, on their internal roster, this is per PW Insider, all those weeks ago, Ricochet is listed as the number two babyface on all of SmackDown. The same Ricochet who lost tonight in back-to-back matches to Humberto and Angel is the number two babyface on the entire show. If you don't think SmackDown is in dire straits, you are a fucking moron. You aren't paying attention. I don't know what show you're watching. When WrestleMania is over, where does SmackDown go from here? What do they do? If they don't immediately go to Roman and Drew, which they shouldn't, who does he face? Do they have another match with Brock? Is that where WrestleMania Backlash is going to be? Another Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar match to ununify the belts? I mean, what do? Do they call Braun Breaker up? Do they panic and call him up right away? It's only a matter of time before he ends up back on or ends up on the main roster, but I don't think it's going to happen lickety-split. I've said for the longest time, there's no reason for LA Knight to be toiling away in NXT. I think he should be called up as soon as he loses to Walter at Stand and Deliver next Saturday. LA Knight needs to punch his ticket that Monday or that Friday and get on the main roster. There is no reason for him to be in NXT anymore. Maybe they go into an LA Knight feud with Roman Reigns. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but to me, this show is in a lot of trouble coming out of WrestleMania because I don't really see a lot of great options right now for Roman Reigns or, frankly, Brock Lesnar on the SmackDown brand. This may be as good as it gets. We may not realize how good we have it right now until this show passes next weekend and then reality sets in. And so right now, that is the state of SmackDown. Over on TNT, what a wonderful, lovely note to end on there, huh? Over on TNT, AEW Rampage. There's Hook. There's the man who challenged for the main event, TNT, or FTW Championship on TNT, I should say, against Ricky Starks. There's Swerve Strickland. Rampage was back in its regular time slot this week, and we opened with Dustin Rhodes. One-on-one against Lance Archer. This was a rematch from the original TNT title tournament a couple of years ago. Archer came out, and he was beating up one of Dustin's students. He had him up on his shoulder. He was carrying him. Dustin came up from behind him on the ramp to make the save. The match finally got into the ring before spilling right back out to the floor. Somewhere in here, Archer pulled off the top turnbuckle in one of the corners. So keep that in mind, because that's going to come into play a little bit later on in the match. Rhodes missed a cannonball on the floor and splattered. Just, you know, to be taking a move like that at his age, to be taking a move like that at any age. I remember when Eddie Kingston took a simple suplex from Chris Jericho off the apron at the pay-per-view, and that looked like it sucked. So Dustin Rhodes at 52 or 53 or whatever he is now, doing a cannonball and missing and splatting on the floor could not have felt very good. So back in the ring, Dustin was bleeding from the ear. They went to the first picture-in-picture break. The cut on the ear looked to be hard way, but I'll get to the blood stuff in a second. Come back from break, and Dustin was making a comeback. He ate a boot, though, from Archer. Rhodes came back, went for a power slam, but Archer countered with a belly-to-belly suplex. Dustin hit a bulldog off the middle rope and then hit the crossroads for two. Oh, ain't nobody winning a match with that move ever again in this company. So he only got a two count out of it. A choke slam got Archer a near fall, and then Archer set up for the blackout. Rhodes escaped. Archer spotted the exposed turnbuckle that I mentioned earlier. He went to send Rhodes into it, but Rhodes dropped down and sent Archer into it instead. He went head first into the buckle, and then Dustin got a jackknife pin and scored the win. I got to tell you, I wasn't really a fan of this. I can't say that I was really a fan. I mean, Dustin was working his ass off. You know, he definitely had his working shoes on for this. But I just couldn't get into this. And I think part of it is that I know in a couple of weeks, and you know I'm right, a couple of weeks, I don't think either one of these guys are going to be on any of the shows. Dustin is not really a featured performer. I know they dust him, no pun intended, they dust him off every now and then to do something with him. Lance Archer is never consistently on this show. He'll pop up and remind me that he's still employed. And then he'll do some stuff, and then he'll just vanish again. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So yeah, we had a match with them tonight. Yeah, it was all right. And in 2 weeks, they won't even be on TV. After the match, Archer attacked Dustin on the floor. He sent him headfirst into the ring steps. And Dustin comes up, and now it's not just the cut on the ear. Now he is bleeding profusely from the head. Blood is pouring down this man's face. Other members of the Rhodes Wrestling Academy tried to save Dustin. Archer, though, destroyed each one of them. And then he picked up Dustin, and he set him up for a choke slam and put him through the timekeeper's table. I know that Dustin is a Rhodes. I know that he is part of the Rhodes family. It's their birthright to bleed. They wake up in the morning and they got blood pouring down their face. I'd hate to be the poor person who has to do the laundry every day and clean those bloody sheets, okay? I understand it's in his birthright that this guy has to bleed. Dustin has to bleed. Cody has to bleed. It's what they do, right? I get that. But there's way too much blood on AEW television. And I like blood in certain situations. I think it can accentuate an angle. I think it can be very powerful. It does make sense in certain hardcore matches, cage matches. Selective blood, I don't really have an issue with. I think it could enhance things selectively, being the key word. When someone bleeds on the show every single week, it loses its effect. It doesn't feel special anymore. All of a sudden, it's almost meaningless. Oh, so-and-so is bleeding. Okay, well, so-and-so is bleeding in segment one. Why should I care in segment seven if we have someone else now who's bleeding on the show? AEW has gone way overboard with the blood. Every fucking show, there's blood on the show. There's three words that I think are words to live by if you're Tony Khan in AEW when it comes to this. Less is more. I'm not saying you have to get rid of it entirely. Less is more when it comes to the blood in AEW. It's to the point of comedy at this point. And frankly, less is more is something that could be applied to a lot of different things in wrestling, and not just in AEW, but in WWE as well. You could use that when it comes to dives. You can use that when it comes to any number of things. Thumbtacks in matches, destroyers. We got to throw blood on that list now. Less is more. Backstage, we had Lexi Nair, who I know her as DDP's stepdaughter. She's done some backstage interview stuff for them before. She was there standing by with Jay Lethal, who had a great match on Rampage, on Dynamite, I should say, Wednesday night with Adam Cole. I love that match. And Jay Lethal was kind of down because he did not win that match, and he said that it was back to the drawing board. He says, you know, I can't see past the two blemishes on my record, which are Adam Cole and Ricky Starks. And he says that both of them had to cheat to beat him. They both get more opportunities than he does, more television time. He says they make more money than he does, but there's got to be a better way. He was channeling his inner Frank Costanza. There's got to be a better way. And he says he's going to have some thinking to do. Then he reiterated, there's got to be a better way. The good news is that they seem to have an idea for Jay Lethal, so we might actually see him getting more television time, which is good. As far as what this idea could possibly be, I have no clue. Could be a heel turn, could be a manager. If so, I don't know who that would be. But I'm just glad it looks like they have some sort of idea for him. So hopefully we'll see more of him on TV. Back from the break, Fuego del Sol was in the ring talking about people poking fun at him. And the announcers poking, well, he's so easy to poke fun at. He's talking about people and the announcers, everybody poking fun at him. But he said he took the fight to Buddy Matthews. He took the fight to Brody King, and he took the fight to Malachi Black. And for a moment, all these people were chanting his name. And I think in that moment, he was expecting that the entire building would be chanting Fuego, Fuego. Fuego. And some people were. He was getting some chants from the crowd. But there was a light Fuego chant at best. And I will tell you that as I sat here watching this, the only reaction that I had in my head and the only thing I thought of when I heard this tepid reaction to what Fuego was expecting, I thought this. I thought to myself, you know, self, if I sat here and I'm watching this show and somebody pause for a reaction from the crowd, and they didn't get it, I would think of the Solemn Monster Joker laugh. I was going to recreate it, but I can't. Because I did laugh, but now I can't do it with my voice. But you have to imagine, when I start the stream every week, we get that little Showtime countdown, you hear that laugh at the end. That was my reaction. That was my reaction when Fuego waited for this crowd to just come alive, chanting for Fuego del Sol. Eh. That was basically the reaction. Eh. That's what they thought of Fuego. He called out the House of Black, and he said he was ready to fight. As soon as he said that, the lights went out. When they came back on, Buddy Matthews was in one corner, Brody King was in another. Malachi Black was standing behind him, and Matthews launched him into a rising knee strike from Malachi Black on the way down. And then we had Brody King pick him up and gave him a Fire Thunder Driver, dropped him right on his head. And as all of the heels went to go leave, they were confronted in the aisleway by the Dark Order. We had Evil Uno, we had Stu Grayson, we had John Silver. And they had a stare down, but they never came to blows. Gonna have a match. Don't know when. Actually, we do know when. They're having it on Rampage next week. So there you go. We're going to have ourselves a six-man tag next Friday night. Lexi Nair was back again, and she was with Dan Lambert in the back with the Men of the Year, TNT champion Ethan TNT champion Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. Lambert announced that the TNT and co-TNT titles, the one that he has, are no longer subject to the open challenge, and anybody wanting a shot at them needs to build a resume first to be worthy of a shot. What a concept. No more of this open challenge shit, apparently, for the TNT title. Scorpio Sky said that for 380 days, people have been trying to crack the Sky Vinci code and have been unable to do so. He says, consider the open door closed. We go right into Red Dragon against Preston Vance and Alan Angels of the Dark Order. No time to breathe on this show. We just right into the next match. On to the next. No wasted time on this show. Angels caught Kyle O'Reilly with a leg lariat and Bobby Fish with a spin kick. He went for a Northern Light suplex on O'Reilly, but Kyle countered into a guillotine. And Preston Vance broke that up by giving Fish a spine buster onto Kyle O'Reilly. Red Dragon came back. They twisted Ten's mask so he couldn't see. I love it. They twisted it sideways. He was basically blind. He couldn't see. And then they hit him with the high-low, and they followed that with chasing the dragon for the win. After the match, Fish and O'Reilly continued the beatdown, and the Jurassic Express ran down to make the save. While all of this was going on, here comes Adam Cole. Baby. And Adam Cole comes down to the ring, and he steals the tag team title belts. We saw him do this on Dynamite on Wednesday. He stole Hangman's World Championship. And so on this show tonight, he stole the tag team titles. Adam Cole came to AEW and became the Repo Man. That is what this man has become. He's a thief. He goes around stealing other people's shit. Remember what Bobby Heenan said about Virgil of the Royal Rumble in 1992 when Virgil came out? He was like number 25 or something like that, 23. And he made some comment to the effect of, boy, what number did he come out? He goes, boy, that's a long time for him to be in the back going through people's bags. Will you stop? This man is a thief. Nyla Rose went one-on-one with Maddie Renkowski, who we were told was trained by Thunder Rosa. Of course, Nyla Rose now is about to feud with Thunder Rosa, so she beat the crap out of this woman 30 seconds this win. She beat her with the Beast Bomb, and that was that. QT Marshall was in the ring to introduce the first recipient of the QT Marshall Certificate of Accomplishment. Hook. Ask yourself this question. QT Marshall was going to give Hook some bullshit certificate that I'm sure Hook doesn't give two fucks about. Why would Hook logically even agree to come down to the ring for this? Why would he even come out? But he did. Came down to the ring. Marshall congratulated him and said that this is something he's going to be able to tell his grandkids about, all his little hookers. He's going to be able to tell all of them about this moment here tonight. And Aaron Solo presented QT with the framed certificate to show off. And then he shot off a confetti gun. Hook then grabs Solo by the head while QT is basically modeling this framed certificate. He's holding it up. Hook takes Solo by the head and rams him into the frame and knocks him down. And with that, Hook takes his leave and goes walking back up the ramp. As he is walking back up the ramp, though, he encounters Danhausen, who puts a Danhausen curse on Hook, and Hook just stares at him and walks around him and just continues walking to the back. And so Danhausen can't believe that his curse was ineffective against Hook. And this was fine for what it was, but personally, in the future, I would prefer not to see Hook doing anything on television with Danhausen. There are just some people who should not be around the comedy stuff. Hook is one of those people. And then in the main event, we had Ricky Starks against Swerve Strickland for the FTW Championship. Real good stuff from these two. Swerve hit a twisting back elbow to the back of Ricky's head off the rope. Starks was in a seated position with his back turned. So he got an elbow to the back of the head. There was a leaping flatliner by Swerve that only got two. Ricky went for the Rochambeau, but Swerve stuffed the attempt. There was an awkward spot where they sort of collided and Ricky kind of fell out of the ring. And then Swerve hit a running shooting star press off the ring apron down onto Ricky Starks. There was a top rope whoopee cushion by Swerve to Starks right on the chest. Excalibur called it a double stomp. That may have been what he was going for. I don't know, but that's not what it was. It was a seated splash. Swerve was out on the floor when Starks came charging in for a suicide dive, and Swerve cut him off before he could jump through the ropes. All of a sudden, here comes Powerhouse Hobbs, and the referee didn't see this. Powerhouse Hobbs comes into camera frame and mows down Swerve. Just body checks him to the ground. Picks him up, rolls him back inside, and Starks hits the Rochambeau to hand Swerve what I believe is his very first defeat in AEW. In fact, I think this was only Swerve's second match. Already a loser in AEW. After the match, Starks, his entourage of nobodies, is holding up this victory banner in the aisleway. It's one of these banners that you expect somebody to come, you know, busting through. So you knew somebody was going to come and bust through it. They're holding up this victory banner, and all of a sudden, here comes Keith Lee. Like the fucking Kool-Aid man. Here comes Keith Lee busting through. I expected, oh yeah, bust through the fucking banner. And he's standing there. He's got a real pissed off look on his face. This is a guy, you know, they said on SmackDown that Ronda Rousey was on the rampage right after what Charlotte Flair did to her the week before. And then I said she came out and she had a big smile on her face and everything. Keith Lee looked like a man on a rampage. That's what you look like. If you're pissed with somebody and you're looking to rip somebody's head off and shit down their neck, you look like Keith Lee looked here in this segment. They zoomed in on his face. He had that pissed off scowl. He climbed up into the ring. And he went to work on Hobbs in the corner while Swerve was brawling in the other corner with Ricky Starks. Referees came out to try to break them up. They're ringing the bell. They're trying to break up all the insanity. And the crowd was chanting, let them fight. The idea that Shane Strickland was signed for a long time, actually. He was under contract in WWE. And they finally call him up, and reportedly the idea was when they called up Hit Row that ultimately it would be him and Ashanti the Adonis as a team, and they were going to push Top Dollar as the singles star, as the singles attraction of the group. Tells me everything I need to know about what the future of Swerve Scott would have been had he stayed in WWE. And yet, he was there for a while. Even in NXT, it took them a while to figure out what to do with him. It really wasn't until the Hit Row stuff that he started to find his footing and really find his groove. But you look at this guy anytime he's in the ring, how talented he really is on the mic and the ring. He's a special talent, you know. He could really be something. And so I'm left, after I watch him in some of these matches, I'm left just thinking WWE's loss is AEW's gain. And I don't know if he'll ever be a world champion for them, but he certainly has the talent to go far in this company, maybe TNT champion and beyond. But he had a great night, and I enjoyed that main event. Now, this Wednesday on Dynamite, Darby Allin takes on Andrade El Idolo, and FTR will take on the Gun Club. Plus, the Bunny, and this is the other kind of big news of the night. The Bunny is going to be hopping on into Dynamite on Wednesday to wrestle a new mystery signing to be announced by Tony Khan, the latest addition to the AEW Women's Division. This is going to be the first qualifier for the Women's Owen Hart Cup Tournament. I've talked about Athena for a while now, the former Ember Moon. I do think ultimately she will end up and should end up in AEW. I think she would be a fine addition to that women's roster. However, the chatter online has been that Tony Storr, who I believe just opened up an OnlyFans, probably made a fucking $1 million in a day. Do you see some of these people on social media? Holy shit, these people need to go outside and take a walk around the block. What do they say? Touch grass? I don't blame her, though. Easy money. But Tony Storm has been sitting at home for a while now. And the chatter is that her non-compete is up on Tuesday. So the timing could not possibly be any better. My guess, we get the debut of Tony Storm on Dynamite this Wednesday. And she beats the Bunny to qualify for the Owen Hart Cup tournament. That is what I think it will happen. That is what I think is going to end up happening on Wednesday. If I had to venture a guess about who this new signing is, I think it's Tony Storm. Next Friday on Rampage, House of Black takes on Fuego del Sol. Fuego, Fuego, Fuego. Fuego del Sol, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson of the Dark Order. I will tell you, I am not sure if I'm going to be covering Rampage next week or if I'll be doing SmackDown and the WWE Hall of Fame, because it is the induction of The Undertaker, obviously one of the biggest stars in the history of the company. And I don't know that they're done, frankly, announcing inductees into the Hall of Fame. You know, there were rumors about Sid. There were rumors about the Steiner brothers. We have one more week left. They could announce one more induction on television next week. I would think they would want to put a tag team in. So it may be the Steiners. I don't know. Right now we have Undertaker, we have Vader, we have, who else is, we have Queen Charmel, and that's it. And then you have Shad Gaspard getting the Warrior Award. So it's possible they want to keep, you know, it very tight, not as long as it used to be, and keep the induction count low, which I'm fine with that. You know, there were years where they would induct seven or eight people in one class, and I always thought, what are they doing? They're going to run out of people. But I'm thinking I might do SmackDown, watch the Hall of Fame, and then maybe hop on here and review both of those instead of Rampage. I don't know. We'll wait and see. I'll keep you guys posted on social media as far as what my plans are as far as all that goes. But let's check the polls right now. Over on SmackDown, you guys gave it a 38%, roughly 38% thumbs up, 62% thumbs down. Yeah, SmackDown is, it's not worth it. It's just not. Take Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar out of the show. What do you have? What do you have? You have a pile of shit. That's really what you have. That's SmackDown. As far as Rampage, 74, almost 75% thumbs up, 25% thumbs down. I thought the show was fine. I enjoyed the main event, but I will tell you, I didn't really think Rampage was anything special either. Better than SmackDown, as far as the bulk of the show, even though I like the Roman and the Brock stuff, but I don't know. Even Rampage really didn't do a whole lot for me tonight. I don't know, man. I don't know. Not one of the better Friday nights. Dope Rebel, I think you're right. Dope Rebel says we need 2017 SmackDown. But what happened to SmackDown? SmackDown used to be a nice respite from Monday Night Raw. You know, it kind of became the A show again. And now, I don't know what's happened. When Raw and SmackDown really weren't all that good, I would always have NXT to fall back on. I don't even have that anymore. Ugh. Anyway, let's check out your super chats. Groovy Goose says, with Regal's track record of clubs he has been part of, hopefully this one will go better than the last one that he was in. Well, this one, he won't need chapstick for this one. Bob the Builder, are you blocked by Ryback on Twitter? Shockingly, no, I'm not. I know a lot of people who are. But no, I am not blocked by Ryback on Twitter. Not yet. Nayef Alsafar, thank you for the pair of super chats, Nayef. $2.99 each, I appreciate that. Joseph Brooks, could you ever see a wrestler one day debuting in the Royal Rumble match and actually winning it? Or is that completely laughable? No, I don't think that's laughable at all. I think that could definitely happen. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, thank you for the five. Good evening, Solo. Do you feel that the good work that Triple H did in NXT made up for the reputation he got for burying opponents in the past? Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of making up for it. I mean, you know, when you're playing with people's careers and livelihoods and politicking and doing all that kind of stuff, I mean, you know, you don't just forget that kind of stuff. That's part of his legacy. That's part of his legacy. You know, I think he improved upon that legacy in his later years with what he did and what he's still doing as far as talent recruitment and that sort of thing. But no, it doesn't excuse any of the backstage bullshit that he did earlier in his career. That should be remembered also as part of his legacy. Not the only one to play politics in the wrestling business, but to imply that he didn't do that, of course, is to, I think, is to be awfully ignorant. Groovy Goose, do you have a favorite WrestleMania sign or logo? Do I have a favorite WrestleMania logo? That's a good question. Actually, I think this year's WrestleMania logo is pretty good. As far as a favorite one, 30 was pretty good. I thought 30 looked nice. I think... I don't know if I have a... I don't know if I have a favorite. Maybe the original. I like the original. I like the original WrestleMania logo. I don't know. I'd have to see all of them mapped out. But those are some of the nice ones that I like. Dick the Cock Johnson. Always good to hear from him. $4.99. Bunny's opponent is probably Athena Ember Moon, but I really hope it's Nixon Newell, a.k.a. Tegan Knox. Well, I think it's Tony Storm. So now we've named three people who it could potentially be. Rizzo with the $20 super chat. What's going on, Rizzo? I just got done watching the Triple H interview, and when he was choking up, I lost it. Makes sense how quiet everybody at WWE was about his health. Glad to see that he's doing better. Also, Ryback for said, tweet that clown. Love you guys. Dev to Dust. Steven Spielberg or Martin Scorsese? Who made the better movies at their peak? Might go Spielberg. Justin Jack with the $7 super chat. You should buy an Xbox controller for Sound Off Gamer. No, I don't think I need an Xbox controller. Because I got this. Got a PS5 controller. And I tried it. Now I can pin my opponent, so we are good to go for Sound of Gamer. So I no longer have any issues with the controls. I just have to learn what they are. But I have no issues anymore, but thank you. Frank Aquilino, $9.99 Super Chat. Great match between Starks and Swerve. Here's your challenge. What are some of Bret Hart's best matches that don't involve Mr. Perfect, Owen Hart, Steve Austin, or Shawn Michaels? That's not really all that difficult of a challenge. I mean, he had a couple of really good matches with Kevin Nash, but the Survivor Series 95 match with Diesel, I think, was the best of the matches that those guys had. He had a really good match with Hakushi at the first In Your House. He had a pretty good match with Jean-Pierre Lafitte, or not Juan. I'm thinking of Juan Ocampo in the chat. Jean-Pierre Lafitte. The Spanish Canadian pirate, Juan Pierre Lafitte. Now, he had a great match with Jean Pierre Lafitte at another In Your House. Obviously, the matches he had with the British Bulldog at SummerSlam and the In Your House in Hershey, Pennsylvania. 1-2-3 Kid on Monday Night. I mean, I can go on. You want me to go on? I can go on. Roddy Piper, WrestleMania 8. Anyway, Mr. Andrew with the $4.99. Yes, that is PCO, by the way. That is PCO, Miguel. $4.99 Super Chat. Oh, Mr. Solomon, sir. You must be mistaken, for Ricochet is the number two face on SmackDown. Meanwhile, the number one face on SmackDown is feuding with Corbin. Dr. NXT Scorpio, They might as well change the Battle Royal name to the Budget Cuts Battle Royal. We all know budget cuts are coming after WrestleMania. Oh, yeah, they absolutely. It is the Budget Cut Battle Royal. Take your pick. I put the graphic up before. Take your pick about which one of them will no longer be on the WWE roster in 6 months. Tuxedo T. Servo, thank you for the five. Appreciate that. Samoan Fan 101 says, Triple H's last match should have been AJ Styles or WrestleMania 37. Well, one thing that Triple H also said in the interview with Stephen A. Smith is that there were plans for him to do something at WrestleMania in Dallas this year. This obviously predated the Hart situation that he had in September. He didn't say what it was that he and Vince McMahon were discussing, but they had discussed a plan for him at WrestleMania. And it does make me wonder if it might have been AJ Styles. Although the last WrestleMania in Dallas, the plan was Triple H against The Rock, and then The Rock couldn't do the show. I don't think they would have done the Rock match on this WrestleMania, but I am now curious what that plan would have been for Triple H on the WrestleMania card this year. I don't know. Maybe Pat McAfee. Maybe it would have been Triple H against Pat McAfee. Or Austin Theory. They would have worked Vince McMahon and Triple H into the storyline. Would have been Triple H against Austin Theory, perhaps. Griga, thank you for the $5. Anti-M Bishop 07 with the $5. Non-wrestling related, rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins of Foo Fighters. Don't mean to kill the mood. And hashtag thank you, Hunter, all the best. I did not know that the Foo Fighters guy had passed away. So that is news to me. Sorry to hear that. Old Dirty Sausage, I know we talk about the classic Mania matches, but what was your favorite build towards WrestleMania? Mine was 98. Yeah, I mean, 98 was okay. Favorite build to WrestleMania. You know what? For me, it might have been 8. I like WrestleMania 8. And I really love the build-up to the Savage Flair match, the whole She Was Mine Before She Was Yours thing with Liz. Bret Hart and Piper cutting promos on each other. Undertaker and Jake in the funeral parlor segment when he slammed the lid of the casket on Undertaker's hand. WrestleMania 8 might be, if it's not my favorite, it's definitely in my top 3. WrestleMania 17 is the greatest WrestleMania of all time, top to bottom. That had a pretty strong build, I would say. So those would be on my list. Of course, WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers Collide. If we're talking that story specifically, I don't know about that whole WrestleMania. I don't really remember much about the build to that Mania outside of Hogan and Savage. I know the matches, but I think of another one. Trying to think of some of the more recent ones, so I could at least throw the recent ones, you know, on there. 30? I want to say 30, maybe, in the whole Yes Movement thing with Daniel Bryan, maybe that. Joe B. with the $5 Super Chat. Been watching wrestling since 2008. Finally gonna go to my first WrestleMania this year. Can't wait to get drunk during all of these celebrity matches. We'll have fun. Having been there for the last one they had there, it is a giant building. So they won't have as many people in the building on each night. When I was there, I mean, they claimed 101,000. I doubt there were 101,000 people in the building. But there probably were a legitimate 90,000 plus that were in the building that night. And I think this year they're planning for anywhere from 60 to 65 per night. That's still a lot of people. So if you've never been to a building that big before, it's a fun experience to do that for the first time. Tomas, do you think Triple H's steroid use may have attributed to the heart issues that he has now? I know he was born with a heart defect, but I am semi-skeptical. I mean, look, you can use your own two eyes, right? You've seen the physical transformation over the years, and I will tell you that there's no way that was a good thing for his heart. And it's surprising to me because you know, again, in the interview with Stephen A., he said that his father had a heart, you know, heart issues at 70 years old. And I think his father is still around. His grandfather, I think he said, died at 50. I mean, so clearly it runs in his family. He was aware of this. And he's not the only one. I mean, the Ultimate Warrior, for God's sakes, the Ultimate Warrior talked about how he thought he was going to die young because his father died of a heart attack in his 50s. And I think his grandfather as well. And look at what he pumped into his fucking veins. You know, in that moment, you're not thinking about that. You're just trying to get big. You want to look good. You want to make money. You want to be a star. And you don't really pay attention. Or maybe you just think you're so young that you're invincible. You're not. You're not invincible. The heart can only take so much. So, my opinion, you're asking me, did that have an impact on things? All I know is that there's no way it did him any favors. And he admitted in the interview that they've checked his heart and everything, and he says he has what he referred to as athlete's heart. Which I would love to know if that's a real thing that people call it. As if it's like an acceptable thing. That his heart is a little enlarged. He said it in the full interview. He goes, yeah, they checked his heart. He's got athlete's heart, and his heart is a little enlarged. I don't think anybody watching this stream right now would be surprised to find out that Triple H has an enlarged heart. So, make of that what you will. I am just happy that the man is on the mend and doing well, and that he survived, because by all accounts, he's a very, very, very lucky man to have survived what he went through back in September. King Bling Blah. Interest in seeing Roman and Walter, Ciampa and Drew. I don't really have a lot of interest in Roman and Ciampa so much. Roman and Drew, yeah, I mean, they had a really good match at Survivor Series a few years ago, so I wouldn't mind that. I would hold off on that as long as I can, because they're going to be coming to the UK, I think, for a big stadium show in September, Labor Day weekend. I would think that could be the main event of that show. Roman and Walter, of course. I would love to see Roman and Walter. But that would mean that Gunther would be on the main roster, and once that happens, all bets are off as far as what happens then. Jamin John with Steve Austin returning, and all... Will this WrestleMania have any chance to beat The Rock's WrestleMania 28 buy record? No. No. WrestleMania 28 predated the WWE Network. So they went out there and they did like 1.2 million pay-per-view buys. There will never again be a WWE pay-per-view that does 1.2 million pay-per-view buys, because they killed their pay-per-view with the network. Now, they took that network and they sold it to Peacock for 5 years for $1 billion, so good on them. But as far as their pay-per-view business, they cannibalized it with the network. You know, I mean, so they still do sell on traditional pay-per-view, but nowhere near the level they used to. So there's no way to accurately measure that. WrestleMania is on the network. It's also still on traditional pay-per-view. They're bringing it to movie theaters like AEW did for Revolution. It's a different world now. They did not have the streaming network back then like they do now. So no, it will not break that record. Rizzo, $10 super chat. Thank you, Rizzo. I hope you're having a good Friday night. Saturday morning. Did WWE officially release Toni Storm, or could they be holding her hostage like they are all, or like they hold Ali hostage? No, my understanding is that she, you know, got her release, and I think her non-compete is just about up. That's my understanding of the situation. Off Leather Wings, is AJ or Brian, Brett or HBK for the modern generation? Yeah, I mean, I guess for the modern generation, that would be a fair comparison. I mean, two smaller guys who are incredibly talented, who I think in a lot of ways are generational talents. I look at AJ Styles and Bryan Danielson as a generational talents. You do not get people like them who come along all the time. That's what Brett and Shawn were back in the day. Dallas Caballero with the $5 super chat. Why doesn't Seth Rollins enter the Andre the Giant Battle Royal and have his WrestleMania moment on WrestleMania SmackDown? I think that would be a fine idea. Makes sense to me. Faisal with the 1999. Good morning from Kuwait. Which WrestleMania match is a guilty pleasure of yours? Ah, the guilty pleasure match, huh? Well, we have 37 years worth of WrestleManias that you're going to make me think of here in this moment. I guess, you know what? The gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania X7. I mean, if you're going to judge that impartially, you know, objectively, it was a terrible match, but I love it. It is my favorite guilty pleasure WrestleMania match of all time. The gimmick Battle Royal from WrestleMania X7. Now we have Bobby Heenan on commentary with Gene Okerlund. Bobby Heenan on commentary for the final time. EJ Slemp, still can't believe they never did Shane against Triple H. Yeah, tell me about it. I laid it all out years ago. Would have been great. A missed opportunity. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, or sell. Who was more underrated as a tag team partner to the star of the group? Who is the more underrated to the star? Okay. Christian to Edge, Matt to Jeff, or Devon to Bubba? Well, you could take the Dudleys off there. I would say Christian to Edge. I think Christian was very underrated compared to Edge. I would go Christian to Edge. I would buy on that. I would rent on Matt to Jeff, and I would sell on the Dudleys. Dr. Scorpio, I got Apollo, Aziz, and Xia Li, and Shotzi, and Shelton, and Cedric as my picks of who are going to be gone after WrestleMania set. Fernando Abreu, I went to SmackDown tonight and brought a friend along who is not a fan. He was not impressed. The hell you say? Crowd felt alive, but the show felt like a long ad for WrestleMania. Well, that's what it was, though. I mean, I don't fault them for that. The show should be a long ad for WrestleMania. Here's the thing you got to understand about the weekly shows. The weekly shows, all they are advertisements for the pay-per-view. That's it. That's all it is. Even though they make most of their money on television, the television shows have always just been one giant advertisement for the pay-per-views. It just so happened that back in the day, those ads were a lot more entertaining than they are today. But that's really all the television shows are designed to be. Might be a little bit different now because they make the majority of their money off the television shows now and not really the pay-per-views. I mean, but that's really what they are. Tomas, I never watched the interview. All I heard was that he had a built-in defibrillator. And he has an enlarged heart, huh? Have you seen his forehead? I have. Again, all the telltale signs are there. All the telltale signs are there. And again, if you're going to ask me, did that have anything to do with what happened? It's impossible to know. Because clearly it runs in the family. Maybe it would have happened anyway. A lot of people who don't do steroids and who are not athletes drop dead in their 40s and 50s from heart attacks. That is a common occurrence. In fact, some people watching this or listening to this might know somebody or might have a family member who that happened to. And you don't have to have taken steroids or abused your body with alcohol and drugs. It can be genetic. It absolutely can happen. But the fact that he acknowledges that this is something that he knew about and that ran in his family and still he likely did all of these other things. You know, it's like you create this ticking time bomb of there's something bad that inevitably is going to happen. Paul Heyman. Since WWE was in Brooklyn, I was hoping to see Solomonster on the Los Lotharios Kiss Cam. I'm sure that would have been a magical moment for you. Magic, you say? I'm sure it would have been. Thank you, Paul Heyman. Samoan Fan 101, buy or sell? AJ against HBK or Brian against Brett? I would go AJ against HBK. That's a match I really would have wanted to see. Tomas, he don't take HGH. He puts jet fuel between his toes. Oh, I guess that's what it is. It's jet fuel, huh? It's like that rocket fuel that Dixie Carter talked about all those years ago when they signed Hulk Hogan. Marcus the Entertainer, buy or sell Ricky Starks or Shane Strickland? In-ring, Shane Strickland. Overall, it gets a little bit tougher. I'm going to go... on the mic, I want to say Ricky Starks, but in the ring, and I think as the overall package, I probably would go with Shane Strickland. So I think we are caught up. Thank you. Thank you for all of your super chat. By the way, shout out to Treehouse. I see you, Treehouse. Yes, Juan Ocampo, you are now Juan Pierre Lafitte. That is what you are. All right, it is time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
The tournaments are in progress right now. The men's Be the Booker tournament and the women's. The voting is underway. So if you are not already aware, head on over to the community section. I have a bunch of posts there, and we have polls up for, I think, almost all of the first round matches that you can vote which match you want to advance in the tournament. I will show you the men's and women's brackets here. Let me just show these to you. This is the men's bracket. So take a good look, figure out which matches you're going to vote for. This is the women's bracket. And we'll keep the voting open for the first round matches for a few more days before I announce, I'll update these images and we'll move on to the next round. We'll move on to the quarterfinals. So that is going to be coming up. But right now we're just going to book ourselves a main event. This is not part of the tournament. We're just doing good old Be the Booker. And in the men's Be the Booker, we land on the Honky Tonk Man. Look at this. I picked a honky here to start. The longest reigning intercontinental champion, the greatest intercontinental champion, if you believe what he says, of all time. Can't think of a single really great match he had during that reign, but, he is nonetheless the longest reigning champion ever. Let's see who the Honky Tonk Man is going to be stepping into the ring with. Funny enough, the first main event that I ever saw in my life at a live event back in 1987 had the Honky Tonk Man in the main event against the Macho Man Randy Savage. So it'll be the Honky Tonk Man one-on-one against the Brooklyn Brawler. I know SmackDown was in Brooklyn tonight. Kind of appropriate, isn't it, that I would land on the Brooklyn Brawler the same night that WWE is in Brooklyn, but that main event, that don't work for me, brother. That does not work for me. Over on the ladies' side, we end up with Dakota Kai. WWE seemingly has no fucking idea what to do with Dakota Kai. They refuse to call her up to the main roster. And now she's acting all crazy and she's teaming up with Wendy Chu in NXT. They don't know what they're doing with this woman. She's too talented for this. Let's see who she's stepping into the ring with. Dakota Kai one-on-one with Stephanie McMahon. Oh, me. I'm on a roll. I'm on a roll with Be the Booker. I'm on a bad roll. I'm booking bad matches here. But at least I'm being consistent with it. At least I'm being consistent. Lil Taylor Made says, can you please do a review on the new WWE documentary, Evil? Talking about the heels of wrestling. It's amazing so far, and I would love your take on it. I do plan to watch at least the first episode. I'm hoping this weekend. If I watch it in time, I will hopefully have some thoughts on the podcast on Sunday. If not, it might have to wait for the following week. But I do want to at least watch that first episode. So, BlizzFan, BlizzFan says if my promotion with that kind of booking, it wouldn't last very long. I wouldn't say so. Although there is something to be said for the freak show attraction. I think at first it might do okay. All these weird matches. I might be able to sell tickets, but over time it's just going to kind of peter out, you know? Tomas, dropping $1.99. Is Brock a better cowboy than Adam Page? Be honest. He is, because he commits to the gimmick. He's out there wearing a cowboy hat every single week. When was the last time we saw Hangman Page in a cowboy hat? Although I will say, Brock rode a forklift. Hangman rode an actual horse for that Stadium Stampede. So it might be a wash, actually. They might cancel each other out. But right now, Brock is more of a cowboy than Hangman is. Marcus, the entertainer. Deonna Purrazzo signed a 2-year contract in October of 2020. Should she leave Impact? She seems disconnected defending her outside championships. I think it's probably time for her to venture somewhere else. I think it probably is time for her to go spread her wings elsewhere and leave Impact behind. You know, we just had her on the House of Glory women's tournament a couple of months ago. She was part of that tournament against Sumi Sakai, who is retiring this year, by the way, after a 25-year career. If you don't know who she is, look her up. She's a veteran of the ring. Miguel says, I know you don't watch Lucha, but check out next month, Phoenix and Vikingo against the Young Bucks. That does sound good on paper. We've got FTR against the Briscoes a week from tonight, in fact. Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor. I probably won't be able to check it out live, but finally getting the Briscoes against FTR for the Ring of Honor tag team titles. They've been teasing that match since, you know, even before Final Battle in December. Oh, look at poor Disco. Getting knocked flat on his face. That's a shame. In that super chat, EJ Slemp, speaking of Lacey's, whatever happened to Lacey, the leader of Lacey's Angels in Ring of Honor? I'm pretty sure she retired, but I don't know what she is up to now. I don't know what Lacey is up to either, but I do. When I first became a fan of Ring of Honor and started going to those shows in 2006, Lacey was all over those shows. I think she was with Jimmy. Was it Jimmy Jacobs that she was with? I remember Lacey, though. I don't know what she's up to today. She is retired, but I don't know what she's up to. Hey, Steven Chappa, look at this, coming in hot. With the Fuck Bully Ray, Bully the Clown. Thank you, Steven. Had to send a last minute chat here. It's been a few weeks. Hope you are doing well. Oh, and Magic Spoon is dope. Love it. Waffle flavor is top tier. I am happy to hear that. I actually heard from a couple of more people who tried the Magic Spoon link, which does still work, by the way. You can get $5 off. It's great cereal. If you like cereal, I'm telling you. Get the money off. Use our link and check it out. And then write back to me and let me know what you think. MagicSpoon.com/SolidMonster if you're interested. Hey, Michael Pryor, thank you for the $9.99. He says, newly subscribed. You seem like a cool, unbiased guy. Well, thank you. See little baby Russo there? It triggered the Russo on a pole super chat. Michael, I appreciate that. And welcome to the channel. Welcome to our little dysfunctional family here. Tony Khan is trying to book Deonna for Ring of Honor Supercar, but Impact has a show the same night. Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. You know, I think in Impact, she's accomplished quite a bit. And I think that, you know, she also would be a fine addition to the women's division in AEW, but potentially could also do stuff in Ring of Honor and AEW and get more visibility in doing so. That's the thing. I think she deserves to have more visibility than she gets if she pretty much, you know, not that she's only wrestling in Impact. She's all over the place, but she would have more visibility if she went elsewhere. And I don't mean WWE, because WWE had her and they did nothing with her. But she's also one of these people like Drew McIntyre who left and has gone out and really, you know, has turned into quite the accomplished performer, where maybe if she went back, things would be different. I'm not sure she wants to go back. Joey says, Deonna will be the AEW Women's Champion soon, right? No. Soon? No. Eventually? Maybe. All right, guys, this has been fun. I appreciate you hanging out late with me. It's 1:30 in the morning here, so we'll wrap this bad boy up. Thank you for all your super chats. Thank you for all of your comments and questions. Rapid fire. This is like Solomonster AMA here. Ask me anything. Doesn't mean I have to answer it, but you could ask me anything. I'm going to be back on Sunday for episode 749 of the main podcast, and obviously Triple H is going to be the top story on that show. I will also be doing NXT Stand and Deliver predictions for next Saturday's event in Dallas. We got a very ridiculously busy week coming up, because I think right now the plan, this could change, but the plan right now for the week coming up is Dynamite on Wednesday, the Dynamite stream. Thursday night, I'll probably go live with WrestleMania predictions. Friday night will be SmackDown and maybe Hall of Fame coverage. I don't know about Rampage. Next Saturday, I'm going to go live with the NXT Stand and Deliver review as soon as that show is over. That's WrestleMania Saturday. So I'm going to try to get that review done when that show is over and then quickly get ready for WrestleMania Night 1. And when that's over, I'll go live again. Then Sunday will be episode 750, if I'm awake. And then that night will be WrestleMania Night 2, live on YouTube as soon as the show is over. So I guess technically that would be 4 podcasts in 1 weekend. So, wish me luck. This is going to be a very busy week. But hopefully you guys will be out in full force with all of your support. Tune in, hit that like button. And with that being said, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week. I'll see you guys for 7:49 on Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.